Hello, and welcome to the Blog You Want and the Time You Have podcast, the show that empowers you to stop making excuses to not blog and realize the potential of content marketing. I'm your host, Scott Winteroth, co-founder of ContentAcademy.com. I invite you to join me each episode for actionable strategies for elevating your blog to the next level and hear from other content rock stars who will share with you exactly what keeps them on task so you can stop wishing for success and start living to your fullest potential. Ready? 3, 2, 1, publish. Well, hello, everyone. I'm here with Patrick Phillips of PatrickKPhillips.com, and I'm really excited to have him on the show because ultimately, Patrick has been doing this for a really long time, if you don't mind. 26 years of professional experience, as well as 14 years with a blog, 14 years blogging over, on the web. And I'm just really excited to sort of tap his brain and talk about what blogging means from him, share some sort of quote unquote war stories, if you will, from over the years of blogging and being on the front line. And finally, kind of what Patrick thinks about the future of blogging and how he's going to leverage blogging for all sorts of things. So Patrick's also a WordPress guy, so I'm sure we'll talk about some WordPress stuff. So Patrick, welcome to the Blog You Want and the Time You Have podcast. And tell us about yourself. Lead us into how you've managed to keep a blog going for 14 years now.
Well, thank you for having me, Scott. It's happy to be with you. I started my blog in February of 2004, and I was basically trying to come up with a way to have sort of a creative outlet that I didn't feel I had. And I sort of fancied myself a Andy Rooney type. I wasn't, but I that's kind of what I was shooting for. And I figured I could just write little pieces that might be entertaining or might be informative or helpful in some way. And so I started, before I started the blog, I did a little experiment with it on GeoCities, if anybody remembers that. And it was basically a static little page, and I changed it, changed the content a couple of times, and I thought, okay, I think I could do this, and started the blog on AOL. America Online had its own little blogging platform at that time, and so that's where I started. And I eventually ended up going to Blogger, and then from there, in March of 2007, I moved over to self-hosted WordPress. So March 2007, I've been WordPress ever since.
Great. So WordPress is definitely your platform of choice. It's pretty amazing. You don't hear too many people talk about GeoCities anymore. So it's always makes me smile when you can go way back.
Or AOL for that matter.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. So you've been blogging for 14 years. You've been on various platforms. Obviously the last 10 plus years on WordPress.
Yeah.
So, kind of talk about like the types of content and that you post to your personal brand blog, if you will, or your domain, if you will. And what is like an ideal post look for you? Like, what's your mission in terms of publishing content?
Well, one of the early things I realized when I set out to do a blog was I was going to have to break one of the cardinal rules of blogging, which is that you should find a niche and stay within that very narrow topic area. I knew going in I was never going to be able to do that and keep a blog going for a long time if I only wrote about one very narrow topic. So that was the first rule that I ended up breaking, and I think it's worked well for me. It may not work well for anybody else, but it's worked well for me. And so when I created my blog, which is Patrick's Place, I identified a few topics. At first, I really didn't have even broad topics in mind. I sort of wrote about what I felt like writing about. And then over time, I looked back at my analytics and I tried to figure out, okay, this type of content is doing well. This type of content, people really aren't clicking on that. So then I began to kind of narrow and focus on a few categories of topics. And so now I write sort of broad, I call it a category life. It's sort of a catch-all. I write some about TV since I've been in it for 27 years now, and I write about technology and social media, that type thing. What I tried to do was create, and over time I've changed the look of the blog over the years a few times, but what I tried to do was get my way to a layout, a theme that would make it really clear from the front page that, you know, this is a multiple topic blog, but the navigation, I felt like it was very important if I could have a homepage where those key topics were across the top menu. And, you know, everybody may not care about grammar so much, or everybody may not care about faith, but I'm hoping there's something along that top menu that if you land on my homepage, you're going to click something and find something of interest. So that's kind of how I got started. For me, an ideal post is one that either entertains or informs or discusses something in a way that gets people thinking. And every now and then, somebody I know or somebody I don't know will email me, or they'll catch me in the hall or something, and they'll say, you know, hey, I read what you wrote about so and so, and it really made me think. And that really, to me, is about the nicest thing somebody could say, because I'm not necessarily out to change people's minds, but if I can at least make them think about topics, you know, it may only reinforce their existing beliefs. But when there's a discussion that makes you examine how you feel about something, even if it doesn't change your mind, if it makes you stop and sort of rethink things, and maybe it strengthens your feelings on a matter, I think that's a good thing. You know, if I don't change anybody's mind, but I help somebody who may think opposite from what I believe to sort of rethink and say, yeah, I do still believe this, and now maybe I know one more reason I believe this way. I think that's a good thing, and I think that's a healthy dialogue that bloggers can provide for people.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to look at it. And also, sometimes you're helping people articulate something that they believe in, but they don't necessarily know how to say it themselves, right? So right. This is like they can then share your content and be like, yeah, I believe this, and this is how I feel.
And I tend to be very middle of the road on a lot of things, politics and social issues and things like that. Part of, I guess, the journalist in me, all that, you know, I did learn a few things in Chay school. And, you know, one of them was that there's always more than one side to an issue. And when I write, I try to incorporate both sides, or all three sides, or however many sides there are within reason. I try to come at it from different angles. I may have a very strong position one way or the other on a topic, but I try to also look at the other side, or at least acknowledge why some people may not feel the way I do, and maybe address that, or you know, sometimes, you know, I may well say it. There's no easy answer, and I don't have one, but here's what I think I believe, and, you know, sometimes that will get a conversation going.
Mm-hmm. It's like almost like the beauty of blogging is that you can have a slant to your content, right? Sure.
Yes.
And so but you know, you can do that if you want, or you could you know, sort of harness journalistic skills to bring your ideas to the marketplace, kind of like what you're doing, which I think is great. Right. It's like, which road do you want to go down? And sometimes you get too far off into a slant, and that's kind of like where you get to the fake news category, which I hate to bring up, but
sure,
but ultimately I think that's, but the beauty is that you have a freedom to say your whatever you want on your own self-hosted WordPress site. And I think that's the beauty of publishing this way.
And right. Sure, and, you know, within, I think for people who work in the news business, you know, you do have to be careful. You don't want to come off as being way to one side or the other. You have to maintain your objectivity. I think people who work in the news business or in journalism or are associated in some way with it, whether they work directly in it or they work in a television or radio station or they have some affiliation with a media entity, I think they have to be a little bit more careful to be fair and be not necessarily fully objective, but they need to, if it comes off on a personal side as if they have no ability to be objective, you know, that could potentially hurt credibility in, I guess, the real world of media. And so I always try to keep that in mind. But like I say, I tend to be very middle of the road on a lot of different topics. And I tend to not only have a talent for finding the other side, but I have a curiosity for the other side. There are some things that sometimes I'll be very much in firm belief of one thing, and it just makes me wonder sometimes, well, how could somebody believe anything other than this? It seems so obvious. And I think there's so many people today that won't take that time to stop and say, well, you know, if this is so right, how can anybody think it's wrong, you know? And I think, mm-hmm. I wish more people would do that. I've told people all the time over the years that, you know, if any one side of a debate had all the answers, there would be no necessity for the other side. So that should tell you maybe there's some good answers over here, but maybe that other side has just as many good answers that we really need to think about and figure out what the common ground, what the common sense aspect of whatever the issue is. And that's the tagline for my blog was regular doses of common sense, and which I try to make use of as much as I can.
Right. Makes perfect sense. No pun intended, right? But yeah. So obviously, I think it's pretty amazing everything that you've established at Patrick's Place and on your website. And I know you have. We've talked, and you mentioned that you have a journalism background. So I assuming that is part of the process in terms of planning and identifying your content calendar and stuff like that. But tell us a little bit about how often you post, and ultimately, like, how do you create your own self-imposed deadlines for publishing to your site?
Well, I post, believe it or not, I post every day. I've posted every day now for 5 solid years. I think in a couple of months, I'll have my 2,000th consecutive daily post that's coming up. And it's, you know, what I've tried to do is create a schedule that's sort of based on topics. So every Monday I'll write about blogging, Tuesdays is grammar, Fridays is faith. And then the other days are sort of wild cards. They're usually the other topics. And I try to hit all of those as evenly as I can. What I've tried to do in terms of, you know, obviously my deadline is every morning something's got to be ready to go. What I have found success with in using an editorial calendar to help me sort of see at a glance what I do and do not have ready to go when I should. I have a post. Tomorrow's post is not quite finished yet. It is started. And then Saturday's post is about probably 3/4 of the way done. I try to stay about 2 days ahead. And I'm not, obviously this week I'm not, but I try to get about 2 days ahead, because I'm a big believer in doing everything possible to kind of reduce that amount of deadline pressure. I think too often if you are under too much pressure to meet a deadline, you will either throw something together that's not as good as it could be, or you'll make errors that you wouldn't have made if you had a little bit more time. So I try to always make sure I give myself a couple of days. I've gotten as far ahead as about 15 days before, which I don't know how I did it, but I did. And it was nice actually to be able to take a day or so off from writing for the blog. I'm a big believer also in the fact that this notion that you have to write every single day is really bad advice, because as you know, and we've talked about this, you know, writers write, but they also read, and they also get out and experience things that will then give them ideas to write about later. And they people watch, and they research, and they do so much more than just sit at a keyboard and write all day. And I think sometimes you need to be able to step away from the keyboard and get out and walk around, and, you know, maybe take a walk around the block. Maybe you'd be amazed how many ideas you get doing something like that. I get a lot of ideas standing in the shower sometimes, and of course I can't pull the computer in there, but you know, you sometimes when you're not writing, your brain that is occupied with writing will suddenly start sparking ideas that you can jot down and explore later. So I try to stay about 2 days ahead, and the editorial calendar has been a big help in helping me do that.
That's fantastic. I know with the getting ideas in the shower, I have a waterproof notepad that I put in the shower. I actually don't use it that much, to be honest with you, but it's funny because I feel like I do get some of my best ideas in the shower.
I love it.
Creating content. I know we talked about earlier in our pre-show discussion is that, you know, that writers have to get out. I think that that's a fantastic point that you bring up, that, you know, you can't, I know a lot of productivity experts and stuff like that, or people who entrepreneurial experts will say, you got to grind and produce as much content as possible. But in reality, when you're on the content creation side, you have to sort of give yourself space to come up with those ideas. And that sort of brings me to the next question, which is a little off the wall here, but I thought I'd ask. You know, what, when you actually, since you're a daily writer, and I know you do writing in various capacities, like, how do you prep for a production hour or something like that? Like, how do you, like, is there a special place in your house or somewhere that you go when you want, when you have to write? Or how do you kind of prepare to sit down and clunk something out?
Well, I have a sort of a little writing office that I've set up, just sort of a spare room. And so I mostly do my writing there. Once in a while, I'll just go in the living room with the tablet or something and try to write something there. But mostly I'm sort of at my desk, at my computer, and trying to do everything there. What I've found, and, you know, everybody's a little bit different, but what I've found is sometimes I write better if I think about a topic. I come up with a topic and maybe a couple of lines, and then I set it aside and sort of let it simmer a little while in the back of my head, maybe sleep on it and try to write a little bit in the mornings, or kind of let it fester a bit over the course of the day and then write about it a little bit at night. I don't have a set time every day that I write. I tend to write, I guess, a little better earlier in the morning than late at night. It just depends. If I'm keyed up enough, I can write just as well at night as I can in the morning. But part of, I guess, what made me look for that 2 day head start, that trying to be 2 days ahead, is it gives me a little bit more time to be able to think about what that next post is going to be that I haven't written yet. And so I find that it gives me a little bit more time on to think about it before I start actually writing it. It gives me a little bit more time to go back and edit and maybe change a few things before it actually gets published. And you know, I think that tends to work better for me. Once in a while, if I get keyed up enough about a topic, I can write a post in maybe 45 minutes, and it's good enough for me to publish. I don't ever use the word perfect. I don't think there is such a thing as a perfect post. And I think if I had waited around to publish a post until I felt it was perfect, I don't think I ever would have published the first thing to start with. So, you know, I think you have to reach a point where you feel like this is as good as I'm going to get it for right now. I'm happy with it. It could be better, but it always could be better. But I'm proud of what I have. I think this will teach people something. This will make people think about something. This may make people chuckle, but you know, I think this is good and ready. And so I'm going to publish. And I think if you have a little bit of extra time for that, and that clock isn't just ticking over your head because you've got to get it posted in the next 15 minutes, I think the content invariably, at least for me, is always going to be better than if I have to just crash something together at the last minute.
Excellent way. I mean, that's sort of what I was thinking. It's like you seem like you're always kind of thinking about your articles all day long.
Well, I am in the point. You know, now one of the things I'll tell you in working in the journalism industry, obviously we have to sometimes be able to crank out a story very quickly, sometimes with very limited information until that begins to come in. So I will say that the journalism discipline gives you the ability to be able to write quickly. And a lot of times, you know, we have to sort of serve as our own copy editors, and we read each other's material and we sort of copy edit for each other. The actual role of a copy editor, unfortunately, is sort of disappearing. But you have to learn how to write well. You have to learn how to write quickly, and you have to learn how to get your facts straight and be concise and be easily understood. So that, I think that discipline certainly helps me. Because I know sometimes that if I'm not as prepared maybe as I would like to be, at least I know that I can write quickly and I can get a point across in a short amount of time if I absolutely have to. So, you know, there's that at least kind of has saved me a few times when I wasn't quite as far ahead of schedule as I would like to be.
Interesting. You know, we've had a conversation, but ultimately one thing I want to ask you, you obviously write on very, very interesting and a diverse set of topics. Mostly news related. It seems like sort of news related topics or trending topics, if you will.
Yes.
I know you dive in and out of different areas, but you know, we talked about before that surprisingly one of your most popular posts was something that you maybe wouldn't think would be. Can you tell us a little bit about that story? About you talked about one that was about faith and the church.
Well, you know, I used to be involved with a church here in Charleston in terms of being part of the tech team, which meant that I helped run lights and all that, just contemporary worship service. And when I stepped away from that and I visited a few other churches, and it seemed like every church I visited, the music was louder than the one before. And it really became noticeable that just sitting in these different churches and just hearing how loud, it was as if they were trying to do a rock concert. And it was just more and more of it. And so I wrote a post about, you know, can we turn the volume down a little bit, basically, was the gist of it. And, you know, it was interesting to me. I had, at that point, I'd recently had an ear infection, and so I'd had some very recent experience with an ear doctor, and so I was maybe a little more sensitive to loud music or that type thing. And I'd asked him, you know, well, what is you know, I'm hearing all this loud music, what is a safe decibel level? And the number he gave me was something around 80. I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but you know, and what I was hearing in some of these churches was 105 or something like that. So I wrote a post just talking about the fact that, you know, there are people who are walking out of churches, and this is true. There are people who are walking out of churches because the music's too loud. And the church's solution is to, or some of the churches, one of their solutions is they will hand out these little foam earplugs that you're supposed to shove in your ears and to muffle the music. And, you know, I made the comment on one of these pieces. I said, you know, imagine going to a restaurant and complaining about the seasoning of the food being a little too much. And instead of them making you a new plate with a little less seasoning, they come and give you, put a giant clothespin on your nose so you can't taste the food and expect you to be happy to go on and continue with your meal that way. Nobody's going to stand for that. But that's the attitude when they hand you these giant foam pieces you're supposed to cram in your ears. And so I wrote that piece just thinking that, you know, okay, well, I'm going to, that this is what I'm feeling today. This is my thought on that. And that post, the first post on that subject, I think now has probably been about 2 or 3 years. And I still get comments on that post. And the, most of the comments are, thank you so much. I'm so glad I'm not the only one who feels this way. And that's another nice thing for a blogger to hear, because, you know, we all walk around sometimes feeling like, well, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only one who thinks like this. And a blogger can connect with the audience sometimes by just voicing the same concerns that they have, but that they think nobody else but them has, you know. And so I've been very surprised with that post, that it's been, I've heard some very sad stories about people approaching their pastors and basically being ridiculed or being accused of not being loyal to the church, or the, you know, things that you would hope that nobody would be told. And it's been very educational for me to hear that, but I think it's been good to be reminded of the fact that, you know, sometimes the opinions you have, there's somebody else out there feeling the exact same thing and wondering if they're the only one. And right. It's nice to be able to kind of make that connection with people.
Well, I think one of the reasons why I bring it up is that the comments are a great way to people who maybe feel the same way, but they don't necessarily have the, they don't want to author their own blog. So it's like you're giving a voice to the voiceless in some ways, which is,
that's really cool.
True. Yeah. Yeah. So excellent. So anyways, that's obviously, that was one of your most, I think you talked about that was a popular post, and I thought it'd be a really cool idea to talk about the thought process behind that.
Yeah.
And not that I'm for or against loud music in church. It was just more of an example.
But, well, I'm still deciding what I like. I like music. I like some of the traditional music. I like some of the contemporary music. I think some of the traditional music has too many lyrics, and some of the modern music, it's almost like there was a writer's strike and they didn't have enough, so they just repeat it 70 times, you know. I'm kind of middle of the road, and if I had to design a worship service that would 100% click with my brain, I don't know what it would sound like, but you know, I think it would be a little bit less loud. I know that much.
Yeah, interesting. I feel the same way too. It's like, I don't want necessarily traditional, but also like the new age stuff is a little, wow, you know, not what I grew up with anyways. But
right.
But
me either. Anyway,
yeah. So well, we're digressing a little bit, but ultimately, you know, speaking of being faithful to WordPress, you know, if you will, using WordPress for a long time. I mean, just sort of a broad question, and obviously you focus on creating content, but how do you manage like your WordPress end? I mean, do you feel like WordPress is a burden to you sometimes, or do you feel like it's an easy solution for hosting and publishing a blog to the web?
Well, I tell you, when I started, I avoided WordPress, to be honest with you, because I had only seen just a little glimmer of it, and I had heard from people who also had avoided it because they said it was so complicated and it was so many moving parts and, you know, you'd never have time to get content out because you'd have to be fixing little things and changing this and changing that and all that. So I went with AOL, which at that time their blogging platform was called AOL Journals. And so my blog started there because I was just intimidated by what WordPress seemed to be. I left AOL after about a year and a half or so because basically two issues. One was that another blogger who was a cartoonist, and he would do these little comic strips like you'd see in a newspaper, but they were very minimalist pieces. They were basically little stick figures with dialogue. That's all it was. And they were funny and cute, you know, but there was nothing earth-shattering. Occasionally a little bit of profanity, but nothing untoward, you know. And apparently one person complained about one of the little panels in this little comic strip he did. And AOL's editors went in and saw the panel, and rather than contacting him and saying, hey, we've received a complaint on this particular image, can you change it? They went in and they deleted his entire graphic library, which meant every post, every individual panel was suddenly just gone. And he didn't find out about it until after it was already done. And the way they explained it to him, they could not recover it once they deleted it, it was gone. That was the first red flag for me that told me, you know, you want to be on your own site. You don't want to be posting somewhere that someone else has the axe hanging over your head, because if they don't like it, it's perfectly within their right to do exactly what they did at that time. The other issue very quickly was they started doing banner ads on everybody's blogs. And if I remember correctly, I know you didn't get a share of any profit they made with it. And you also could not have a say in what businesses you did and did not want. And I was at that point having a little argument with a particular bank, and suddenly that bank just happened to have its banner ads on my blog at that time. And that was a little bit too much for me. So I still was afraid of WordPress. So I went to Blogger from AOL, was there for a while. And then I started really looking at WordPress and talking to people who'd actually had been on it a while. And then I realized when I finally made the switch in 07, so this is about 3 years after I started the blog, I made the switch and I was looking at it and I was just thinking, what on earth was I so afraid of? I mean, it's not this complicated monster of a thing. And by then, you know, they had created this 5-minute setup process where you could just transfer your existing blog from Blogger or wherever, and then within a 5-minute installation, suddenly once you had your domain purchased and you were ready, it would just put it there for you. And I just thought, well, what was I afraid of? This was so simple. And, you know, I tell people now that they say, oh, well, you know, I'm looking at these other, there's so many platforms now. And, you know, I don't mean to knock any of them. You know, I've not looked at some of them. I've never even touched, but you know, most of them I don't want to touch, because WordPress, the latest stat is it powers 30% of web pages across the internet. That should speak volumes to people. Any one service that powers that much of anything, there must be something pretty good about it. But beyond that, almost every major city has got a group of WordPress people that do meetups. They help each other when there's a problem. They have WordCamps all over now where people come together and meet and talk about WordPress. They talk about how they can make their sites better. They talk about problems they've overcome. There's so much community within WordPress, and there's so much help out there. Not to mention the fact that Lord knows how many themes and plugins are available for WordPress. There are tens of thousands by now. You know, some are free, some are paid, but you know, there's such a range of really good quality stuff out there for WordPress. So, you know, now I tell people it's, I don't know why you wouldn't want to go to WordPress. Now, having said that, I will say one thing. I think in my case, I was very lucky because when I started on AOL, it was a very small, tight-knit group because basically nobody who wasn't an AOL member ever made it to AOL journals. They never even had heard of it. So that small, tight-knit group of us who were on AOL journals at that time, you could write a post and within a day you'd have 25, 30 comments. And everybody communicated with each other. Everybody supported each other. Even when they didn't agree, there was a respect there. There was a sense of community. So I was spoiled from the beginning that, you know, I could do a post and get all this interaction. And that kind of spurred me on. It's like, wow, people are actually reading all this stuff I'm writing here. Let me write another post. Of course, when you get out into the real world, when you go out, you switch from being in a pond to the ocean, there are not as many comments now as there used to be. And I think that's true for most everybody. It's harder to get people to engage because there's so many more sites. But I think what AOL, one of the good things AOL did was it sort of gave me evidence that if I wrote and it was decent enough, people would come back and read. So that kind of kept me going long enough till I could get to WordPress and realize, wow, this is a great platform. This can do so much, more than probably I would ever want to be able to do, but if I ever wanted to, it could handle it. And so I will say that starting off somewhere else probably in my case was a good thing. But to me, everybody who's blogging elsewhere or who's thinking about a blog, no matter where you start, as far as I'm concerned, WordPress should be your destination. That should be the end goal, as far as I'm concerned.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, definitely. I see what you mean. Like, you see that even today with particular platforms where it's nice when you have a community sort of built in.
Yes.
But that comes with risk. You know, it's sure. Like you lose control by not, you know, like it's a bad situation.
Yes.
But I think a great point to make with the gentleman who was on AOL who lost his content, because yes, when you're on a software as a service or what they call a SaaS platform, like at the time AOL, but today a WordPress.com version, yes, or a Squarespace or something like that, which again, I'm just like you, I love them all for various different reasons, but you do also have that sort of issue where you could be against the terms of service. And I think this is a really fantastic point to highlight to people who are looking to either get into or are still in a position where they could migrate to a different platform. Preferably, I would recommend WordPress.org or self-hosted, yes, WordPress, like you were saying. But
good point. Yeah, WordPress.org is what I'm talking about, because that's the one where you buy a domain and then you set up hosting and then you install WordPress software from WordPress.org onto your site rather than going to WordPress.com, where there's some controls that they enforce, and there's still that you don't own the content. I mean, you own it, but you may not control it 100%. If they see something that they feel goes against their rules, they can take action. Just like Facebook, even, you know, you post something on Facebook that goes against their rules, well, they may well delete your account, and they can do that. And people will always complain, well, what about free speech and all that? Well, when you sign up for these services, there's a little checkbox every time that, you know, the checkbox says, I agree to follow the terms of service. And as soon as you do that, there is no free speech. That's not applicable on someone else's privately owned website. And so that's kind of the issue, and a lot of people lose sight of that, but that's the reality of the situation, you know. And when you can get to a platform where you control it, and I don't want to do that just so I can say whatever irresponsible things I want to say. It's not about that. It's just that, you know, you may have an opinion on a topic that someone else may disagree with. And if you're on someone else's platform and somebody complains that you're engaging in hate speech or something, even if you're not, well, if the editor of that platform doesn't really look at it, they just don't want to deal with the complaint, so they just come in and zing you, you know, your content is gone.
Or an algorithm gets ticked, you know. Right. It might not be a real human. It could just be a computer that's taking it down.
Absolutely. Know? That's true. That's true. And, you know, for all we know, it could have been a computer that hit his. If it registered a complaint, it could have just gone in and done it. I'd like to think it wasn't that, and I don't think it was. But, you know, who knows these days? That's a good point.
Exactly. Wow. This has obviously been a great conversation. I do have like one or two more questions to kind of wrap up. And I like to ask this, especially for people who've been doing this for 10 plus years. You know, if you could have given yourself some advice back when you just started blogging, and I know you've talked about changing platforms and stuff like that, but if there was something that you do today that you wish you knew 10 years ago, what would something like that be?
You know, I think, I have contemplated over the years the name of my blog. Patrick's Place is not a bad name. I don't hate it, but it doesn't give you any idea what the topic is. And so I wish I had come up with a better name back then. Now, of course, now Patrick's Place is the title of my blog. It's my Twitter account, it's Instagram and all this other stuff. So at this point, it'd be more work and more of a uphill battle to try to change it and get people used to something different. But if I had it to do over again, knowing now what I do, I probably would have come up with a better name. You know, that's probably the best answer I can give you on that.
Got it. Always a good thing. It's always hard coming up with names.
Oh yeah.
I think most importantly, what's awesome is that you just did it, you know, which is the most important hurdle out of all of them. A lot of people sometimes can't get past the idea of doing it. And it's amazing that you've been doing it and doing it consistently for all this time.
Wow. Well, I did think about it for a while. Yeah. Well, thank you. I did think about it for a while. It took me a while to actually hit publish that first time. It took me a few months of nudging myself, but yeah, I'm glad I finally talked myself into it.
Awesome. Well, Patrick, it's been my pleasure and honor to speak with you about blogging. And what are some ways that people can find you on the web aside from going to your site?
Well, I am the site, of course. The easiest shortcut, if you can remember Patrick's Place, is probably patricksplace.me. No apostrophe, just patricksplace.me. I'm on Twitter, Patrick's Place, all one word. I'm on Facebook. I'm sort of building a Facebook audience there. It's kind of sort of small right now, but facebook.com/Patrick's Place blog, one word there for that one. If you come to the site, though, there are links to the other social media pages. So, certainly you can find everything there as well.
Awesome. Well, excellent. I will definitely also add links into the show notes so people can just click. But in case they can't access the show notes, just like to give people a way to find you.
Sure. I appreciate that.
Yes. Awesome. Well, Patrick, again, a pleasure to speak with you. And thank you so much for being a guest. And as I know I say this often, but I truly mean it. I know that I want to get you again on the show and in a couple more episodes later down the road, because I know you'll have some stuff to talk about. I'd love to maybe do an episode on grammar.
It
sounds like a topic you're interested in. And I know aside from grammar and journalism topics and a lot of other great topics, you also have a category on your site called For Blogging. So I definitely want readers and listeners of the Blog You Want podcast to head on over and check out your blogging articles, because I think they're great. And well, I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us.
Well, I appreciate it, Scott. I was very happy to be with you and enjoyed it very much. And I'd be happy to sit in with you on another episode.
Okay, that's a wrap for episode 15 of the Blog You Want and the Time You Have podcast. If you would like to learn more about this podcast, head on over to theblogyouwant.com and please leave a review on your favorite podcatcher service such as Google Play or Apple iTunes podcasts. We would really appreciate your feedback. Thanks, and bye for now.